National System of Assessment of Foreign Language Proficiency, Level B2. The listening paper consists of four parts. In each part, you will hear the recordings twice. In each part, there will be time for you to look at the questions before you hear the recordings. You can write your answers on the test booklet. At the end of the test, you will need to copy your answers to the answer sheet. Now turn to part one. You will listen to people talking in six different situations. For questions 1 through 6, choose the best answer, A, B, or C. You have 30 seconds to look at the questions. Now we are ready to begin. Speaker 1.
I feel like changing my hairstyle, but I'm not really sure what style to go for. What do you think?
I think it suits you as it is. But if you want to change, we could do you a light perm and give it a bit of body. Or we could cut it all off and give you a short bob. How does that sound?
I've had a perm before and it didn't suit me. And to be honest, getting my hair cut short sounds a bit drastic. I think I'll just go for my usual old cut and blow dry with a little bit off the ends.
Speaker 2.
See the advert in today's paper for cheap flights to Portugal.
I know.
When I got the tickets last week, they said we were getting the best deal possible. Cheaper than booking online, just like your friend Alan said when he advised us to go to them.
Yeah, a lot of use he was.
Right. I mean, obviously, it wasn't the best deal, because this advert's offering flights and hotel combinations for much less than we paid.
Speaker 3.
Come on, Derek. It's time you had a break from your books.
What time is it now, then?
It's 7 o'clock. At least you should stop and have something to eat. You've been at it all afternoon, since midday, in fact.
Okay, then, but just for half an hour.
Speaker 4.
This is a customer announcement. We have a range of special offers in several departments. In our fashion department on the first floor, we have a sale in men's designer shirts. On the second floor, the household goods department has special offers in kitchenware and small appliances. And in our food hall on the ground floor, there are some outstanding price cuts on all fresh meat.
Speaker 5.
I went to that new furniture store at the weekend, the one that's like a huge supermarket. You know, it's actually hard to shop with all that furniture. Anyway, there were these wonderful sofa beds, which were really cheap. It's such a pity I'd already bought one. And there were also these great wardrobes, real oak. A bit expensive, but exactly what I've been looking for. They're going to deliver it to the house next week. Oh, and they had these armchairs with beautiful bright covers. When I saw them, I immediately thought of you. Next time I go, you must join me.
Speaker 6.
Any ideas what to get Mike for his birthday?
Why don't we just each put £10 in his card? That way everyone's happy.
Bit boring though, isn't it? I'd rather be more original. Maybe we could buy him something for his new flat.
Why not call him and ask if there's anything in particular he'd like?
I don't really want to do that. Mind you, he has got very unusual taste. Okay, I guess you're right. I'll give him a call.
Now listen again. Speaker 1.
I feel like changing my hairstyle, but I'm not really sure what style to go for. What do you think?
I think it suits you as it is. But if you want to change, we could do you a light perm and give it a bit of body. Or we could cut it all off and give you a short bob. How does that sound?
I've had a perm before and it didn't suit me. And to be honest, getting my hair cut short sounds a bit drastic. I think I'll just go for my usual old cut and blow dry, with a little bit off the ends.
Speaker 2.
See the advert in today's paper for cheap flights to Portugal.
I know.
When I got the tickets last week, they said we were getting the best deal possible. Cheaper than booking online, just like your friend Alan said when he advised us to go to them.
Yeah, a lot of use he was.
Right. I mean, obviously, it wasn't the best deal, because this advert's offering flights and hotel combinations for much less than we paid.
Speaker 3.
Come on, Derek. It's time you had a break from your books.
What time is it now, then?
It's 7 o'clock. At least you should stop and have something to eat. You've been at it all afternoon, since midday, in fact.
Okay, then, but just for half an hour.
Speaker 4.
This is a customer announcement. We have a range of special offers in several departments. In our fashion department on the first floor, we have a sale in men's designer shirts. On the second floor, the household goods department has special offers in kitchenware and small appliances. And in our food hall on the ground floor, there are some outstanding price cuts on all fresh meat.
Speaker 5.
I went to that new furniture store at the weekend, the one that's like a huge supermarket. You know, it's actually hard to shop with all that furniture. Anyway, there were these wonderful sofa beds, which were really cheap. It's such a pity I'd already bought one. And there were also these great wardrobes, real oak. A bit expensive, but exactly what I've been looking for. They're going to deliver it to the house next week. Oh, and they had these armchairs with beautiful bright covers. When I saw them, I immediately thought of you. Next time I go, you must join me.
Speaker 6.
Any ideas what to get Mike for his birthday?
Why don't we just each put £10 in his card? That way everyone's happy.
Bit boring though, isn't it? I'd rather be more original. Maybe we could buy him something for his new flat.
Why not call him and ask if there's anything in particular he'd like?
I don't really want to do that. Mind you, he has got very unusual taste. Okay, I guess you're right. I'll give him a call.
This is the end of part one. Now turn to part two. You will hear someone giving a talk. For questions 7 through 14, choose the best answer, A, B, or C. You have 30 seconds to look at the questions. Now we are ready to begin.
Mooncake has long been popular among the Chinese communities in many Western societies, and of course, it first appeared in China many centuries ago. And it's also extremely popular in countries such as Indonesia and Thailand. But I hadn't actually tasted it until I visited Japan some years ago. I enjoyed it so much that since then, I've eaten it in places as far apart as Vietnam and the Philippines, each time being pleasantly surprised by the differences in appearance, ingredients, and flavour. Of the traditional types in China, I very much like those filled with egg, dried fruit, or seeds. Though, for me, the one that really stands out has nuts inside. All of these kinds are quite sweet, as of course are the more modern varieties filled with chocolate or ice cream, though I'm not so keen on those. Whatever the type of mooncake, though, it is best accompanied by tea. I certainly drank lots of it when I was in Shanghai last year, rather than my usual favourite coffee with milk. I was fortunate enough to be there while people were celebrating the Moon Festival, an annual event that sometimes takes place in October, although last autumn it was in September. In other years, it's been held only just after the end of August. During the festival, I learnt a lot more about mooncake from the Chinese family I was staying with. I noticed the form of a rabbit on the upper surface of the one I was about to bite into, and it was pointed out to me that others may have flowers on the top, or the name of the bakers written there. Mooncake is traditionally seen as a way of bringing families closer together, so I'd assumed that most Chinese people baked their own at home. But when I asked the family about that, they said few did, mainly because it's so difficult to prepare. Nowadays, of course, people in towns and cities often buy mooncakes in supermarkets, and at that time of year, many are received as presents in gift-wrapped boxes, often from relatives or friends. Though, in the case of my host family, theirs was from the employer of both the man and the woman. Although living in Shanghai, the family originally came from the city of Ningbo, further up the coast to the northeast, and as a gift, they gave me a mooncake to take with me when I left. This one differed from the generally sweet varieties found elsewhere in China, in that it tasted a little salty, on account of the fact that it was made from locally produced ingredients that included meat. By this time, I was becoming fascinated by everything connected with mooncake, and I asked the family to tell me a little about its history. They told me it first became popular in the 14th century, during the time of the Ming Revolution, when people passed on secret messages to one another as writing on the top of four mooncakes. To understand the code, the cakes had to be cut into four slices each, and then joined with those from the other cakes to complete the message. This took place on the day of the Moon Festival, which then, as it still is today, was one of the most important dates in the Chinese calendar. Once the message had been received, the evidence soon disappeared when everyone ate the mooncakes.
Now listen again.
Mooncake has long been popular among the Chinese communities in many Western societies, and of course, it first appeared in China many centuries ago, and it's also extremely popular in countries such as Indonesia and Thailand. But I hadn't actually tasted it until I visited Japan some years ago. I enjoyed it so much that since then, I've eaten it in places as far apart as Vietnam and the Philippines, each time being pleasantly surprised by the differences in appearance, ingredients, and flavour. Of the traditional types in China, I very much like those filled with egg, dried fruit, or seeds. Though, for me, the one that really stands out has nuts inside. All of these kinds are quite sweet, as of course are the more modern varieties filled with chocolate or ice cream, though I'm not so keen on those. Whatever the type of mooncake, though, it is best accompanied by tea. I certainly drank lots of it when I was in Shanghai last year, rather than my usual favourite coffee with milk. I was fortunate enough to be there while people were celebrating the Moon Festival, an annual event that sometimes takes place in October, although last autumn it was in September. In other years, it's been held only just after the end of August. During the festival, I learnt a lot more about mooncake from the Chinese family I was staying with. I noticed the form of a rabbit on the upper surface of the one I was about to bite into, and it was pointed out to me that others may have flowers on the top, or the name of the bakers written there. Mooncake is traditionally seen as a way of bringing families closer together, so I'd assumed that most Chinese people baked their own at home. But when I asked the family about that, they said few did, mainly because it's so difficult to prepare. Nowadays, of course, people in towns and cities often buy mooncakes in supermarkets, and at that time of year, many are received as presents in gift-wrapped boxes, often from relatives or friends. Though, in the case of my host family, theirs was from the employer of both the man and the woman. Although living in Shanghai, The family originally came from the city of Ningbo, further up the coast to the northeast. And as a gift, they gave me a mooncake to take with me when I left. This one differed from the generally sweet varieties found elsewhere in China, in that it tasted a little salty, on account of the fact that it was made from locally produced ingredients that included meat. By this time, I was becoming fascinated by everything connected with mooncake, and I asked the family to tell me a little about its history. They told me it first became popular in the 14th century, during the time of the Ming Revolution, when people passed on secret messages to one another as writing on the top of four mooncakes. To understand the code, the cakes had to be cut into four slices each and then joined with those from the other cakes to complete the message. This took place on the day of the Moon Festival, which then, as it still is today, was one of the most important dates in the Chinese calendar. Once the message had been received, the evidence soon disappeared when everyone ate the mooncakes.
This is the end of part two. Now turn to part three. You will listen to a conversation. For questions 15 through 22, choose the best answer, A, B, or C. You have 30 seconds to look at the questions. Now we are ready to begin.
With me in the studio today, I have two pilots, Richard and Stephen, who are going to answer some of the most frequently asked questions about flying and air travel. Hello to both of you.
Hello.
Hello.
Right. The first question is, what weather conditions are the most dangerous when flying a plane?
Well, probably the most dangerous weather conditions are when the wind changes direction very suddenly. This tends to happen during thunderstorms and typhoons, and it's especially dangerous during takeoff and landing. But it's quite unusual. I've been flying for 37 years now, and I've only experienced this three or four times.
Is all turbulence dangerous?
No, in fact, it's not normally dangerous. Pilots know when to expect turbulence, and we try to avoid it by changing routes or flight levels.
Which is more dangerous, takeoff or landing?
I would say takeoff is probably slightly more dangerous than landing. Mm. There is a critical moment just before takeoff when the plane is accelerating, but it hasn't yet reached the speed to be able to fly. If the pilot has a problem with the plane at this point, he has very little time, maybe only a second, to abort the takeoff.
Passengers often think that putting on seatbelts in a plane is really a waste of time. Is that true?
Not at all. When the plane is moving on the ground and the pilot suddenly puts the brakes on, passengers can be thrown out of their seats, just like in a car.
Yes.
But more importantly, during the flight, if there is sudden and severe turbulence, you could be thrown all over the cabin if you aren't wearing your seatbelt. That's why airlines usually recommend you wear your belt even when the seatbelt light is off.
Should we really listen to the safety information?
It's definitely worth listening to the information about emergency exits. If there's a fire on a plane, it may be dark and the plane will be full of smoke and fumes. So listening to where the exits are and working out which one is the nearest exit to you might save your life. Most aircrew can even tell you where the emergency exits are in the hotels where they stay.
What about life jackets?
Fortunately, planes very rarely have to land in the sea. But to be honest, the chances of surviving if your plane did crash into the sea are not high.
Are some airports more dangerous than others?
Yes, some are. Particularly airports with high mountains around them. Mm. And airports in countries with older or more basic navigation equipment. Mm.
For some difficult airports, like, let's say, Kathmandu, they only allow very experienced pilots to land there. And for some of these airports, pilots have to practice on a simulator first before they are given permission to land a plane there.
How important is it for pilots and controllers to have good, clear English?
Oh, it's the official language of the air, so obviously it's vital for pilots and controllers to have good English. To be honest, it doesn't always happen.
And apart from people's English not being good, some countries don't respect the convention and don't force their pilots to speak in English. But most of them do, luckily.
Now listen again.
With me in the studio today, I have two pilots, Richard and Stephen, who are going to answer some of the most frequently asked questions about flying and air travel. Hello to both of you.
Hello.
Hello.
Right. The first question is, what weather conditions are the most dangerous when flying a plane?
Well, probably the most dangerous weather conditions are when the wind changes direction very suddenly. This tends to happen during thunderstorms and typhoons, and it's especially dangerous during takeoff and landing. But it's quite unusual. I've been flying for 37 years now, and I've only experienced this three or four times.
Is all turbulence dangerous?
No, in fact, it's not normally dangerous. Pilots know when to expect turbulence, and we try to avoid it by changing routes or flight levels.
Which is more dangerous, takeoff or landing?
Both takeoff and landing can be dangerous. They're the most critical moments of a flight. Pilots talk about the critical 8 minutes, the 3 minutes after takeoff and the 5 minutes before landing. Most accidents happen in this period.
I would say takeoff is probably slightly more dangerous than landing. There is a critical moment just before takeoff when the plane is accelerating, but it hasn't yet reached the speed to be able to fly. If the pilot has a problem with the plane at this point, he has very little time, maybe only a second, to abort the takeoff.
Passengers often think that putting on seatbelts in a plane is really a waste of time. Is that true?
Not at all. When the plane is moving on the ground and the pilot suddenly puts the brakes on, passengers can be thrown out of their seats, just like in a car.
Yes.
But more importantly, during the flight, if there is sudden and severe turbulence, you could be thrown all over the cabin if you aren't wearing your seatbelt. That's why airlines usually recommend you wear your belt even when the seatbelt light is off.
Should we really listen to the safety information?
It's definitely worth listening to the information about emergency exits. If there's a fire on a plane, it may be dark and the plane will be full of smoke and fumes. So listening to where the exits are and working out which one is the nearest exit to you might save your life. Most aircrew can even tell you where the emergency exits are in the hotels where they stay.
What about life jackets?
Fortunately, planes very rarely have to land in the sea. But to be honest, the chances of surviving if your plane did crash into the sea are not high.
Yes. Are some airports more dangerous than others?
Yes, some are. Particularly airports with high mountains around them. And airports in countries with older or more basic navigation equipment.
For some difficult airports, like, let's say, Kathmandu,
yes,
they only allow very experienced pilots to land there. And for some of these airports, pilots have to practice on a simulator first before they are given permission to land a plane there.
How important is it for pilots and controllers to have good, clear English?
Oh, it's the official language of the air, so obviously it's vital for pilots and controllers to have good English. To be honest, it doesn't always happen.
And apart from people's English not being good, some countries don't respect the convention and don't force their pilots to speak in English. But most of them do, luckily.
This is the end of part three. Now turn to part four. You will hear part of a lecture. For questions 23 to 30, choose the best answer, A, B, or C. You have 30 seconds to look at the questions. Now we are ready to begin.
Today I'm going to be talking about amateur journalism.
In other words, journalism practiced by ordinary people, not professional journalists. For people like you, who want to get some real writing experience, this can be a good way to get started. And later, I'll be offering you some practical tips to help you. Amateur journalists are providing more and more news. I think the main cause of this change has been the internet. Nowadays, anyone close to an important event can write a report and email it to a newspaper. Or they can take a photo with a digital camera, or use their mobile phone to make a video film of what's happening. Also, amateur journalism isn't just for people who are in the right place at the right time. People can now write reports and articles about things which a big organization might not be interested in, and post their ideas on their website or blog. This means that all sorts of people can express their views. Also, in the past, if you wanted to make your opinions known, one of the few ways of doing this was to send a letter to a newspaper. But normally, newspapers only print a few of the thousands of letters they receive each day. Now, people can write about the things which are really important to them and the people around them, and they put it in a blog. As a result, amateur journalists often write about something which is a local issue. And by local issue, I mean something happening in the school in their area, or the traffic in their town, but not something necessarily of national or international interest. Amateur journalism is a growing phenomenon. There are now major online newspapers. Oh My News in South Korea, for example, has a large number of readers, and for this reason, they can attract advertising and get income from this. And as a result, it's become a profitable business. But how can you get involved? How can you begin to write articles which will be published on sites like these? Well, first you must have something interesting to say, something you want to communicate with readers. Assuming you have this, it's important in an article to attract people's attention and gain their interest. So put the main facts first, answering these questions: who, why, when, how, and where. Get those basic facts down to start with and get people interested. Then fill in the details in the rest of the article. The best model is really shaped like a pyramid. You put the most important facts at the top of the article and lots of smaller details down below. Remember, you want people to keep reading, so you need to hold your readers' interest. A really good technique for doing that is to put in quotations from people who are part of the story, what they really said. You know the sort of thing. Tanya, mother of two, said, "It all happened so quickly that we didn't have time to react." Quotations bring the article alive. Once you've written your article, go over it again to make sure that any figures you quote are correct. Make sure that Tanya really has two children and not one or three. Then, after that, once you've got your ideas down, rewrite your article, making sure that your paragraphs don't contain more than three sentences. People like them to be brief and to the point, and this will help to hold their attention. And another thing to bear in mind: if they're reading online, people will soon stop reading your piece and start reading something else. So keep the whole article brief. Don't put in a conclusion. Just let your article end without it. Another good piece of advice is to remember that old cliché which we've all heard, that a picture is worth a thousand words. It's true, so if you can, include a picture. It'll attract more attention and illustrate what you've been saying. Finally, you need to write a headline. Something eye-catching which will get people to just skim the article to start with, and then, if it's well written, they'll read it more carefully afterwards.
Now listen again.
Today I'm going to be talking about amateur journalism. In other words, journalism practiced by ordinary people, not professional journalists. For people like you, who want to get some real writing experience, this can be a good way to get started. And later, I'll be offering you some practical tips to help you. Amateur journalists are providing more and more news. I think the main cause of this change has been the internet. Nowadays, anyone close to an important event can write a report and email it to a newspaper. Or they can take a photo with a digital camera, or use their mobile phone to make a video film of what's happening. Also, amateur journalism isn't just for people who are in the right place at the right time. People can now write reports and articles about things which a big organization might not be interested in, and post their ideas on their website or blog. This means that all sorts of people can express their views. Also, in the past, if you wanted to make your opinions known, one of the few ways of doing this was to send a letter to a newspaper. But normally, newspapers only print a few of the thousands of letters they receive each day. Now people can write about the things which are really important to them and the people around them, and they put it in a blog. As a result, amateur journalists often write about something which is a local issue. And by local issue, I mean something happening in the school in their area or the traffic in their town, but not something necessarily of national or international interest. Amateur journalism is a growing phenomenon. There are now major online newspapers. Oh My News in South Korea, for example, has a large number of readers, and for this reason, they can attract advertising and get income from this. And as a result, it's become a profitable business. But how can you get involved? How can you begin to write articles which will be published on sites like these? Well, first you must have something interesting to say, something you want to communicate with readers. Assuming you have this, it's important in an article to attract people's attention and gain their interest. So put the main facts first, answering these questions: who, why, when, how, and where. Get those basic facts down to start with and get people interested. Then fill in the details in the rest of the article. The best model is really shaped like a pyramid. You put the most important facts at the top of the article and lots of smaller details down below. Remember, you want people to keep reading, so you need to hold your reader's interest. A really good technique for doing that is to put in quotations from people who are part of the story, what they really said. You know the sort of thing. Tanya, mother of two, said, "It all happened so quickly that we didn't have time to react." Quotations bring the article alive. Once you've written your article, go over it again to make sure that any figures you quote are correct. Make sure that Tanya really has two children and not one or three. Then, after that, once you've got your ideas down, rewrite your article, making sure that your paragraphs don't contain more than three sentences. People like them to be brief and to the point, and this will help to hold their attention. And another thing to bear in mind, if they're reading online, people will soon stop reading your piece and start reading something else. So keep the whole article brief. Don't put in a conclusion. Just let your article end without it. Another good piece of advice is to remember that old cliché which we've all heard, that a picture is worth a thousand words. It's true, so if you can, include a picture. It'll attract more attention and illustrate what you've been saying. Finally, you need to write a headline. Something eye-catching which will get people to just skim the article to start with, and then, if it's well written, they'll read it more carefully afterwards.
This is the end of the listening test.